there was an outbreak of legionellosis. Mm-hmm. Just explain first what that actually is.
Sure. So legionellosis is a disease that is transmitted usually from waterborne sources through aerosolized drops. So things like cooling towers, swimming pools, fountains, saunas, those are all places that could be potential sources of exposure to legionellosis. Here in our county, we've had a cluster because we've had multiple cases. We've not been able to yet link a case to an actual source, which would then change the definition to an outbreak. We've done a lot of testing in partnership with the New York State Department of Health of local cooling towers around where the cases have been found, which will tell us if Legionella is present. It doesn't tell us initially if a source is connected to a case. Genomic mapping needs to be done in order for us to know that, and that takes several months. So it'll be a little while before we know if any of the samples we collected are directly connected to any of our cases. And it may be that we never do find the source. That happens often with legionellosis cases and clusters, but we're doing a lot of testing. There's been a lot of disinfecting of cooling towers around the city of Ithaca and where the cases were located. So we feel like we've got a good grip on the situation. And thankfully, we haven't had any new cases in almost 20 days now. And the incubation period for legionellosis is 2 to 14 days. And so we like to see two incubation periods pass. So we're all about 3/4 of the way through that with no new cases. So we're hopeful we'll get to that point and we can, you know, give the all clear that we've thankfully interrupted the cluster and that we haven't had any new cases.
Could you give an update on the people who did get legionellosis?
Sure. Well, we don't ever talk about individuals' personal health information, but holistically, all of our cases have needed hospitalization. We have, unfortunately, had one death associated with it. But I think at this point, everyone else is either in recovery or recovered from their exposure. So we're hopeful that we got to this quick enough and have limited the impact on our community.
Right. And this is different from COVID because it's not spread person to person. Is that right?
That is right. Correct. You have to be exposed to the source of it. And so that's why interrupting that source, whether it be a cooling tower or trying to identify another source, is important for us. So that way we can limit additional exposures to that. And it does feel like at this point, we haven't identified an exact source, but the work around disinfecting of cooling towers appears to have interrupted the cluster. So perhaps it was one of those cooling towers that has been disinfected.
I know that the past, I'd say, 2 months, everyone I know who's gotten COVID has never had it before. It's their first time getting it. But apparently that new strain isn't here in New York State, is what I heard. So what's going on with COVID in Tompkins County right now?
Sure. So as it has throughout the pandemic, COVID continues to evolve. There are new variants out there. Our vaccines that we've had to date have helped us decrease the severity of illness from COVID. They've had some impact on transmission as well. We have a new vaccine that has just been approved. So hopefully in the next few days, we'll start to see it in our pharmacies and at our doctor's offices for those that might want it. Case numbers have gone up over the last few months. We saw a bit of a summer wave towards the end of summer, and we expect that to kind of carry on into the fall. So case numbers are up, and it's not surprising that folks either are getting reinfected and or are getting infected for the first time, because we are talking about different variants of the disease, and we're kind of moving into a new vaccine that we're hopeful will be more effective against the strains that are circulating currently. So yes, more COVID out there. Want folks to be mindful. You know, same messages they've been hearing us for quite some time. You know, those that are susceptible, have underlying health conditions, wearing a mask when indoors around others is a good idea. For everyone, staying home when you're sick, hand washing, covering your cough, you know, all of those basic activities that we've been asking folks are still what is the best way to help us prevent the spread in our community.
I've been wondering about this. How does a public health agency really keep up with cases of COVID with so many people using home tests and then never having to go to the doctor, maybe never going, fortunately, never going to the hospital. So how do you know that cases are up?
Sure. Yeah, it's a good question. And we get that a lot, particularly because of the predominance of home testing. We've shifted our approach to it, right? In the early days when we didn't know much about COVID, it was really important for us to know the details of exactly how many cases we had in our community. Now we know COVID's out there. So it's really more about what is the impact COVID's having on our community. And so looking at those higher end data points like hospitalizations is really what's telling us the picture. We know COVID's out there. Is it having a more severe impact on our community, meaning people are needing to seek health care or hospitalization, is a key measure for us. We do have testing that occurs in doctor's offices still if folks seek health care. It's similar to the flu in that, you know, many people get the flu and don't seek health care. They may be taking over-counter medication and ride out the symptoms. But some do go to the doctor, and we have sentinel physicians that do testing to confirm that we have flu in the community. Not all doctors will test for flu. If you come in with symptoms, they'll make a clinical diagnosis and, you know, give you advice on what to do. So it's a similar approach. We do have wastewater sampling testing that's going on. So we do have information from that perspective to add to kind of our toolbox on, you know, what's going on with COVID in the community. But we are monitoring it, and we will continue to do it. And really our focus is on letting folks know when we're seeing cases in the community and continuing to, you know, provide our recommendations on how to stay safe.
How often is wastewater testing done? I was listening to an interview with a scientist last week who said that the presence of COVID in wastewater precedes a rise in cases more publicly, I guess, or more visibly. Is that your experience?
Yeah, well, you would imagine, so to answer your question, wastewater sampling is being done weekly. New results are posted. It's a New York State website, but you can link to it from our health department website. It is an upstream measure, right? Because you could be shedding the virus through the sewer systems before you're in a place where you're going to need to go seek healthcare, right? And so you could potentially see a rise in the virus in the wastewater system before you necessarily saw a rise in the case numbers from testing. It's still an inexact science, and it's being developed, and it's been expanded to look for other diseases as well, because it can give you kind of an early warning sign to know that you have something circulating in your community.
So COVID doesn't know any boundaries. So in terms of Tompkins County and our neighbors, what are you hearing from, or are you still in regular contact with other health directors and what they have what's going on in other counties in terms of COVID?
Certainly our regular communication isn't as often as it was during COVID, the height of COVID. We definitely keep an eye on what's going on around us. I do have monthly meetings with my colleagues around the state, and, you know, we talk about many issues, including COVID and what's happening. And I think, you know, we're always interested in what other places are doing if they're having more success. And we're also always ready to support our colleagues if there's information or resources about what we've been doing that we might be able to share with them. So there's definitely collaboration that goes on regionally, but certainly the communication isn't as intense as it was during the height of COVID.
And you're not hearing anything significant coming from other counties about COVID?
No.
About their current COVID cases?
I think there's varying degrees of interest in COVID from county to county, right? Depending on where you are in the state. And for good or bad, it is what it is in those communities. And so I have colleagues that COVID doesn't even come up for them anymore, right? Folks have just moved on from it. And then, you know, we here are, you know, still looking at it and trying to keep our community informed about what's going on related to COVID on a fairly regular basis. And there's probably a spectrum in between there of how counties are approaching it. But I think, all of the public health officials are attentive and looking to it. And certainly, you know, when they feel it's appropriate, would, alert their communities.
You know, that makes me wonder about But there are people who have significant illnesses or especially immune vulnerabilities. And I wonder if, like, can you talk about what may have changed or if there's any good news for them, especially people who might be medically vulnerable, especially children maybe, who have sort of chronic illnesses and might be medically vulnerable and do have to be sort of continually vigilant about COVID, about infections in general, but COVID is especially kind of risky.
Yeah, for those folks that are vulnerable, it's challenging, right? It was challenging pre-COVID because there's a lot of other things that they could be exposed to. I guess my hope coming out of, you know, the last 3 years is that we as a community, defining that however you want, a county, a state, a country, are at least a bit more educated about public health and communicable disease and how it spreads, and that there's information for those that are vulnerable on how to protect themselves a bit more, perhaps by wearing a mask, avoiding crowds, those kinds of things. And then for people that are around vulnerable individuals, knowing that, well, if somebody's wearing a mask, you know, that's their choice, and we should support that. And if they, you know, if you're going into their space and they ask you to wear a mask, I hope people would, you know, out of good faith to protect, you know, those that are most vulnerable. So it is a challenging thing, but it's not a new phenomenon. It just got intensified during COVID, right? Those folks that were vulnerable have been dealing with this, that vulnerability their whole life. And so, again, my hope is that having gone through this, there's a bit more respect and understanding for the challenges that, you know, the person next to us might be facing.
I think there's another thing that became more prevalent during the lockdown during the past 3 years of the peak of COVID, and that has to do with mental illness. And so we're sitting in the county mental health building today. I came over to talk with you here, but the county's also, I think, embarking on some new things. And I wonder if you could talk about what the county, maybe what is going on regionally in terms of mental health, like what are the big challenges that you're seeing that may be concerning?
Sure.
Need to be addressed.
Yeah, well, I guess I would start with, from the COVID perspective, I'm hoping that a lot more people have seen the direct connections between physical health and mental health, right? Because I think one of the things that became glaringly obvious during COVID was decisions that we were making to protect against the spread of the disease were having unintended consequences or unavoidable consequences of causing mental health issues. One, it was exacerbating issues for folks that already had severe mental illness or, you know, needed significant support because they couldn't get that support as readily. COVID was very isolating, which we as humans don't want to be isolated. We're social beings, and so that created issues. The economic impact with people losing their jobs or, you know, struggling to pay their bills, find food, just added anxiety to for them. And so we just saw it kind of snowballing. And it was already heading in that direction pre-COVID. We were seeing mental health issues become more prominent. So that's kind of where we are right now. There's two issues at foot. One, the severity of illness that we're seeing is more significant, and there's more people needing help. And we just don't have the capacity to meet all of that need. So that's our struggle. Finding licensed professionals is one of our biggest challenges, and we're working really hard to try to bring new folks on board, onboard them and get them up and running so we can start to meet the capacity in our community.
Like in Tompkins County, how would you characterize the changes? And where are those? Is it with young people? Is it with older people? Is it with certain types of mental illness that specifically need to be addressed?
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, it's a little bit of all of that. I think we're definitely seeing in our youth that they were significantly impacted during COVID with not being in school for a while, the whole remote schooling thing. For some kids, schools were their place of refuge, right? They might be in a difficult situation at home, and going to school for 6 or 7 hours a day was where they got love and attention, right? That they might not get otherwhere, where they got, you know, some medical attention if they needed it, where they got meals where they could sit down with their classmates and eat in a, you know, a more happy environment. And so they missed that. And they also weren't around adults that might be able to identify that they have, you know, a mental health issue that needs to be addressed. You know, parents were working really hard just to kind of keep things going. And so, you know, when kids are in school or they're going to their primary care doctor for well visits, those are all opportunities for those professionals to see the flags that might be there for a child that might need some extra help. And so we lost some of that during COVID as well. So I think we slipped behind, and I think we've got some work to do to catch up for that you know, generation of kids that, you know, went through COVID and really felt the impact of it.
And what else are there any new initiatives, new programs, or anything new that that Whole Health is doing specifically around mental health in the county?
Yeah, well, we're excited that our first care team started a couple of weeks ago. So this is a joint venture with the Sheriff's Department to have a dual response model. So we have a licensed clinical therapist who is an employee of the mental health department here, and a deputy are teamed up. And they're out in a vehicle patrolling the community and are available to respond to 911 calls that might be appropriate for a different type of response. And so they've got a couple of weeks under their belt, but we're already hearing success stories about, you know, a call they went on with a suicidal individual that in probably any other instance, if it was law enforcement alone, would have been taken to the hospital involuntarily to be evaluated. And because there was a therapist there right on scene, they were able to work with the individual, do an evaluation, get a safety plan in place, and ultimately the person didn't have to go to the hospital. So it saved that individual the negative experience that it can be if you're going involuntarily and needing to be evaluated at the hospital. It certainly saved the resources of needing to transport them there and, you know, have them be in the hospital and need those resources as well. So it's early, and this is anecdotal, but we're working on trying to collect data around this project as well. So we'll be able to demonstrate at some point whether or not we've made a strong impact. And I'm like 95% positive that we're going to be able to demonstrate that. But we know we have our work to do to make sure we can show the community that this is a good model, and that it's probably something we should consider expanding so that there's more availability of it. And we do have resources for a second team. So we're still looking for a second social worker, licensed clinical therapist to join. And that person would be teamed with IPD for the city. So we're looking to you know, expand and cover the entire county with that programming and be able to test it out, see how it goes.
Oh, that's really interesting. I think that's something that people have been wanting to hear about or wanting to see tried or done here in this county and other places as well. And that it's also something that has been tried in other places, mm-hmm. right? Successfully, not successfully?
Yeah. Or? We've talked to quite a few other places that have implemented this, and they've had a lot of success with it. So I would go so far as to describe it as a best practice in the industry of alternative response. And our sheriff has been super supportive of wanting to work with us to make this happen.
I wonder how prevalent these programs are in rural communities compared to big urban centers.
Yeah, it's a good question. Most of the people that we've talked to have been in those kind of larger urban areas. So I don't know the answer to that. Maybe we'll be the model, right? Because right now our program is with the Sheriff's Department, so it's for the parts of the county outside the city of Ithaca, which is the rural parts of the county. And so maybe we'll be able to demonstrate what that looks like in rural communities.
Anything else you think that listeners should know in terms of public health as we're going into the winter, as we're just going along day to day?
Yeah, I think the one thing I do want to mention is we've mentioned Whole Health, right? And that we've done a merger here in Tompkins County of public health and mental health. And I've even slipped during this conversation and said mental health department or public health department. So we're adjusting. But the important thing is not the name. It's really what we're trying to do behind the name. And that really is look at people's health holistically, right? Across the board, and not be siloing and figuring out how we can most effectively meet the needs of our community. So I would just say to those that are out there listening, hold us accountable to that. We're really trying to make a different approach to how we deal with health, certainly from a county government perspective. And underlying all of that is health equity. We have made that a core tenet of what we're trying to do during this merger, is we want everyone to have the equal opportunity to be as healthy and safe as they can be. And we know we haven't been successful yet in achieving that. So we've got work to do. And, you know, we ask the community to help us do that, hold us accountable, know that that's what we're trying to achieve. And if there's better ways that we can do things, we're always open to hearing from our community about that.
What do you see as the greatest challenge? We haven't talked specifically about addiction and drug use. We've talked about mental health. Sometimes those are bound together. But you know, throwing everything out there, what do you think is your department's biggest challenge right now in terms of whole health?
Yeah, so I think the mental health side of things is a big part of it, right? Where there's demand, and I would include behavioral health in that, you know, which includes substance use disorders. We need to resource it appropriately so we can affect the change that we want. So that's a big part of it, is trying to figure out that. I think we're also looking at trying to take a public health approach using the concepts of prevention and getting upstream on social determinants of health, things like poverty, housing, food insecurity. We need to be talking about those things in order to stop needing the interventions down the road, right? Mental health, substance use disorders, physical health issues, all of those things are impacted by those social determinants of health. And so we're trying to shift the conversation both internally in our department as well as in our work in the community, that let's be talking about prevention whenever possible, because that's where we're going to have the most impact on our overall health in the community. And so mental health being joined with public health, I'm hoping that we can focus that attention on public health, behavioral health, substance use disorders, in the same way we do cancer, HIV, AIDS, sexually transmitted infections, right? Let's get upstream and let's try to figure out how we can improve the overall health of our community.
You just sort of touched on there being a shortage of treatment, or the challenge is having enough treatment, mm-hmm. which made me think specifically about the new addiction treatment center that opened a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. Am I right? But there was recently a report by a different news outlet that said there's been a shortage, like it can't meet full capacity because it's got a shortage of trained staff. So do you know what the status of that is right now? What's going on?
Yeah, our local Alcohol and Drug Council has done an amazing job of putting together a facility up on Hanshaw Road that will include medical stabilization, otherwise known as detox. But they've been unable to open completely because of the inability to recruit nurses. And because it is a medical-based program, without the nurses, they can't operate. And so we are all working very hard trying to figure out how to solve that problem. Whether it be the Alcohol and Drug Council, our local healthcare system, the county, everyone is working to try to figure out how we solve that problem. We don't have a solution just yet, but I'm hopeful that some things are in the works that will get us to that point where we'll be able to open that much needed resource in the community. But it's definitely a challenge. Finding licensed professionals of every kind in healthcare right now is a difficult environment.
And is the problem that Did it ever have enough staff? Sort of, did they have enough staff and they lost people, or did they never have enough staff?
No, it's a brand new program. Mm-hmm. So they had to go through a lot of processes for licensing before they could even think about opening. And during that time, they had begun recruitment, but recruitment has been unsuccessful. So they've been able to open some of the programming up there, so the drop-in center, that kind of part of it. But the medical detox and medical stabilization, which requires those healthcare professionals, they have not been able to open those beds yet because they haven't been able to recruit. So it's never been open. It hasn't been open yet.
Is there a chance that they could lose that facility? Because
we're not going to let that happen, right? Okay. Certainly, there's always a chance, but we're not going to let that happen, right? I think we've been working collectively as a county for many, many years trying to bring that resource here because we knew it was very important. And thankfully, the Alcohol and Drug Council stepped up and took on the challenge of bringing it here. The state gave a lot of resources. The county gave a lot of resources. We're going to get across that bridge. We just got a couple of more steps to take, but we'll definitely get them there. And
thank you so much. I appreciate your taking the time.
Sure, anytime.